Hello, everybody, and welcome to the NASDAQ Dorsey Wright podcast for this week being May the 10th, 2021. My name is Jay Gragnani, and here joining us this week is Chuck Fuller. Chuck, great to have you on.
Yeah, great to be here. It's been a little while. I'm looking forward to talking.
You know, it's interesting this time of year, as we discussed last week on the podcast, with the month of May coming in, so brings the what is historically known as the seasonally weak six-month period in the market. And that's a period of time that has engendered an adage in the market that is called sell in May and go away. And we dove into a lot of those numbers in last week's podcast. So if you missed that on market seasonality, be sure to go back and listen to that. And while we've seen a bulk of the return come in the market during the seasonally strong period, that being from November through the end of April, it doesn't necessarily mean that this next 6 months in the market has to be a weak stretch by any means. As a matter of fact, recent data shows that there's actually a fair number, nine out of the past 12 seasonally weak periods of the market have actually produced positive returns. So with that said, though, you know, we wanted to focus a little bit more on some interesting activity that we've seen within the markets, not only here recently, but also historically as it relates to some data points that we've seen. And, you know, one of those data points that we've seen is just a sheer number of new stocks rising and hitting new 52-week highs. And that in and of itself, it probably isn't all of that surprising or shocking, just given what the market has done really over the course of the past 12 months or so since the market bottomed in March of 2020. But here over the course of the past couple of days, we've seen a lot and a historically high number of individual stocks, Chuck, moving to new highs here recently.
Yeah, we really have. So, you know, if we look at Friday's action, you know, of course, we went to new highs on the S&P, you know, that day. And we saw, you know, I think it was 552 new highs on the NYSE that day. And that's historically pretty high. I mean, if you look back at time, I think maybe there's been like 15, 16, you know, different days where you've seen new highs that high. And you know, typically, you know, you might say, oh, you know, kind of sounds like a bad thing. Maybe it's getting overstretched. And, you know, that could be the case over the short term. But in general, it's happened in pretty good market periods, if you look back. So, you know, it happened in kind of the beginning of 2010, which is kind of sort of similar to now, right? You had a, you know, big bounce off the 09 bottom, and you're about a year out from that bounce, you know, once you kind of in the March, April 2010 period. You know, it also happened off the 2003 bottom after the tech crash, you know, at the beginning of that decade. So you kind of saw that kind of late 2003, 2004, and then maybe like 97 and then 1982 were the other times we've seen it, you know, going back all the way back to 1979. It's very rare. And actually today we're seeing, you know, even more new highs. And I'm looking out at the Wall Street Journal page right now, and you know, I'm showing 633 new highs, which is, you know, even more historic. Actually, if I look at the data, I'm just going to update my thing. Yeah, this will be the fourth highest new high day that we've seen since 1979, which is just wild. You know, especially considering, you know, what we're seeing today. I mean, this isn't like some, you know, runaway bull market day. You know, we're seeing the NASDAQ down 1.5%. We're seeing, I'm looking at the Russell's down, you know, about 0.9%. The Dow's doing great. You know, it's up 300. So it's a very strange day in the market today. Seems to be, you know, we're seeing a continuation of this kind of value trade that we've seen the last few months. You know, you've seen, you know, we were talking about that a little bit before the call, JG. You know, I was looking at VLUE, and it's, you know, somewhat flat, but you were looking at another ETF that that seems to be doing quite a bit better on that front, right?
Yeah, I mean, the value thing. So RPV is a Russell, Invesco S&P 500 Pure Value ETF. RPV is the ticker symbol on that. So that's really like your large cap value. And even the iShares Russell 1000 value ETFs, those were up around 60 to 80 basis points each so far today versus growth RPG, which is a S&P 500 pure growth ETF, was down about 1.3%. So, you know, even just today, while it's interesting, you continue to see that value trade really play out this year. And it's even going further today with a lot of the value, more value oriented areas of the market performing well, not the least of which being energy, which has done well so far this year and continues to be the best performing sector this year, which is a very interesting thing to say, given what's happened with energy over the past few years. Energy has really been the big laggard area, doing well this year, and it's coming on the heels of Friday, the news coming out of the Colonial Pipeline having to shut down, and that is that, you know, certainly a big deal, cyber attack causing that. But that has, you know, certainly been a big deal. But really, it's not energy. While energy is continuing to lead, really today you're getting movement and getting positive action out of a lot of the value-oriented or more defensive type of sectors. I mean, just today, if you look at all of those sectors, you look at utilities, real estate, industrials, financials, staples, as well as energy, all up right about 1% so far today versus some of the more growth-oriented sectors, technology, communication services, by and large, as well as consumer discretionary, those are all down 1% or slightly more. So you're really seeing a big spread there today in this value versus growth phenomenon that's really been playing out for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too. The you know, we were talking about, you know, again a little bit before the call, but you know, you heard about the hack, and you kind of expect you know, gasoline futures or, you know, crude futures to really go up over something like that. But we haven't seen it. You know, gasoline futures have turned down, you know, crude oil futures have turned down. You know, it's really kind of interesting, but you know, the stocks themselves are having a good day. And actually, I was just looking at the chart of XLE, which is, you know, that spider energy ETF, and it broke out today. Again, took out its, you know, its March high. And I was looking at a longer term chart of it, you know, the 2%, or not the 2% chart, but the $2 chart, you know, and it's actually right up against its trend line. So it's like its longer term, you know, bearish resistance line or its negative trend line. It's right up against it. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch, you know, going forward. If it makes it through that, you know, it'll, you know, give a little bit more credence towards this idea that energy's, you know, on its way back.
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, it's been, like I said, it's been the best performing sector so far this year, and it's done so while crude oil prices have continued to climb. But really, you look across the board, and while crude oil and energy commodities in and of itself, they tend to be the largest weight inside of any commodity-related indexes or commodity, right, broad-based commodity funds, just because they tend to be more production-weighted, so very similar to how the S&P 500 is cap-weighted. The biggest companies are getting the biggest weight. Some of the bigger, well-known commodity indexes just put more weight towards the commodities that have more production, crude and energy being right at the top of that list. But, you know, the strength within commodities really has been seen across the board. There's been a lot of pockets, a lot of positive areas within the commodity space outside of energy, with some of the agricultures and base metals as well, copper, you know, being right up there at the top of that list, and things that are doing well. So, you know, within the commodities, it has been a very, very interesting movement in crude oil, and the energy pipeline obviously is going to grab all of the headlines. But, you know, just looking underneath the surface, you've seen a lot of strength within commodities.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's interesting that you bring up the you know, the commodity index weighting too, because, you know, looking, it's kind of the opposite, right, with equities, where energy has a low weighting, in the S&P, let's say, you know, mostly because it hadn't done very well, right, over the last little while. So, you know, again, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that does going forward.
Yeah, I mean, energy is one of the least important sectors to the S&P 500 in terms of its weighting, around about 3% of the S&P 500 versus technology, which is now closer to about 24% of the S&P 500. So, you know, the fact that energy is doing well is certainly good for energy stocks, but not necessarily a big driver of overall market performance in terms of the S&P 500, which when we look at the markets and have the ability to rotate towards that strength, you know, a strong move in energy could certainly benefit those that are utilizing a relative strength-based approach at navigating the markets, because they have the ability to get into an overweight areas like energy, like maybe basic materials, some of these sectors that don't tend to be big weightings within the S&P 500, but over time have the ability to drive big returns within a portfolio. So, you know, that is certainly something we look at energy. It's been among the stronger sectors within our Dolly rankings for quite some time now, and continues to be up there within the top half of the sector rank. So, you know, energy continues, and really a lot of the commodity related sectors continue to show good positive relative strength within the market. I think one of the big questions outside of, you know, what's happening with the markets and just the interesting activity today. One of the big questions that we get a lot, or certainly on a lot of people's minds as we're sitting here at new highs and a lot of stocks continuing to push to new highs, is when's the next correction or the next market pullback around the corner? And there is this data that we've looked at over the years that just looks at, you know, a 10% pullback in the market is something that we would talk about as being a rather normal pullback that has been seen in the market on average about once a year. And I emphasize the on average piece of that, because there's, you know, more once you peel back the covers there, that when you dig into the data, it's pretty interesting. But this idea that we get a 10% pullback per year, and we're over a year now since we've had a 10% pullback. You have to go back, you know, since the market bottomed in March of 2020, we have the market, as defined by the S&P 500, has not seen a 10% pullback. There have been other pockets of areas that have pulled back 10%, but we're just talking about the S&P 500 here. Has not pulled back 10%. So, Chuck, when we look at that, you know, that data point, should we just expect every calendar year to see one 10% pullback and be done with that?
No, you shouldn't. You know, it's one of those things that you tend to see one a year. But you know, when you look back in time, and we've got S&P data going back to, you know, 1927, and you know, there's a lot more in, you know, obviously, you know, bad market periods, and there are good market periods. So, you know, if you go back to the, you know, the 1930s, there are a ton of 10% pullbacks, you know, in the 1930s, obviously there was a Great Depression during that period. You know, even in the, you know, the beginning or the first decade of this century, you know, the 2000s, you know, we saw, you know, quite a few too, nowhere near as many as the 30s, but, you know, still a fair number. But, you know, when you get into bull market periods, you tend to see fewer. There's definitely times where you go long periods of time without seeing a 10% pullback. You know, I think the most recent kind of multi-year period that we saw was kind of this between 2011 and 2015. If you remember, I just remember 2012, 2013, and 2014 were like pretty easy years for the market. You know, you saw some pullbacks, but you know, nothing substantial. The market more or less just kind of, you know, went from the bottom left corner to the top right corner. Everybody thinks about like the 90s too, as being like an incredible time to be invested in. You know, when we looked at that period, it was pretty similar, right? You had a 7-year period where you never saw a 10% correction from like 1990 to 1997. You know, right after that, you saw, you know, 20% correction in 98, and, you know, obviously things started to top from then on out. But yeah, for sure, you can go a long period of time, without seeing one. So just, you know, we're, you know, a little over a year out, from the last one that we've seen. And I think a lot of people, you know, that causes them to hesitate and say, oh, you know, we must be, you know, at or near a top. And that could be true. You never know, you know, with these things, it's somewhat random. But you know, just looking at that by itself really doesn't tell you that we're you know, going to see something over the short term, because it could very well just keep on running. And then really, that's what people least expect, I feel, right now. You know, we're coming off the Corona crash, and I feel like the psychology that's going on in the market is everybody's expecting there to be another big crash. You know, maybe not Corona, you know, style, but you know, once you get a 35% crash, you kind of expect the next one to be, you know, pretty big too. Yeah, I kind of remember this after 2008. You know, everybody was expecting the next 2008 to happen in 2010 or 2011 or whatever. But you didn't see it. You know, we saw increased volatility, I'd say. You know, I think you saw probably more 20% corrections, you know, like in 2011, kind of 2015, 2018, those kind of things. But, you know, obviously we haven't seen another 2008 since then. And so, you know, my guess is that, you know, we either just kind of keep grinding higher, or, you know, maybe we see a, you know, some chop. A lot of times you see that in kind of like the second year of a bull market, you see a lot, you know, more kind of sideways movement than what you're used to. But yeah, nothing suggesting that there's got to be a pullback just because we're, you know, it's been a while. So,
yeah. So to put some of those numbers into some perspective in looking at the data, in the 1930s, that decade, there was 33 10% pullbacks during the 30s.
Right.
So you were getting about three every year on average back in the 30s. The next decade that had the highest number after that was the decade of the 2000s, where you had 11. And so the decade of the 2000s was very volatile, nowhere near the 30s, but that, you know, that is the highest number. That's the only other decade other than the 30s that saw 10 or more 10% pullbacks in the market. And that was the decade, you know, the 2000s, although obviously you had 2008, you know, right there in the middle of all of that. But that's also the decade that was dubbed the lost decade for investors, because the S&P 500 had 10% pullbacks, had four 20% movements, two up, two down during that decade, but it basically finished at almost slightly lower, but almost the exact same level that it started with. So the S&P 500, the average investor, really didn't make any headway in that decade. But there was a lot of opportunities underneath the surface, and small cap U.S. equities did well. Commodities did really well. Emerging markets, international, developed. All of those areas produced positive returns in that market environment, where the S&P 500 basically was just flat. So, you know, that was an interesting decade. In the 2010s, there was only six, though. So while the data says there's about one per year, the reality is, you know, we can go many years in between seeing those 10% pullbacks in the market. So just, you know, something to keep in mind and interesting to note there.
Yeah, and one interesting thing I was just going to hop in and say with the 2000s decade is, yeah, you know, you had 11 in that decade, but interestingly, in that middle period, so like kind of in between the tech crash in 2008, you didn't have one. You know, basically 2003 to 2007, you know, you had a 4-year period where it just kind of grinded higher. You know, I wouldn't say it was like a massive bull market or anything, but it was a good bull market. But then 2008 just, you know, obviously wiped away all those gains. So again, even in the middle of a bear market, you can have a long stretch, you know, where so interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is always interesting to look at the data and look at the historical averages, and you know, no two markets are exactly alike, and that's, you know, certainly something that we'll continue to see. You know, things are certainly different now than they were in the 2000s, and very, very different than they were in the 30s. Yeah. But it is, I think, very useful just to provide some perspective in the market and looking back at the historical data, look and understanding, you know, kind of where we've come from to understand where, you know, where we may go from here. So, with that said, you know, Chuck, it's always great to have conversations. You and I could probably sit here for hours and just talk about, you know, the historical market data and what happened and all that kind of good stuff. But we'll wrap it from here. As always, we appreciate you joining us for these podcasts and these discussions this week. Thank you for taking time to listen to us. If there's a topic or anything you would like to hear us discuss on these podcasts, please reach out to us and let us know. You can email dwa@dorseywright.com or you can give us a call, 804-320-8511. So Chuck, thanks for joining us this week for the discussion. Thank you all for tuning in, and we look forward to talking to you next week.